In this episode, I talk about pressure and release and positive reinforcement in a hopefully helpful way and freeing you from the extreme opinions and helping you play where the truth is, in the middle somewhere. I also have a big announcement. So here we go, episode 262, Pressure, Release, Reward. Hey, I'm Karen Rolfe, and welcome to Horse Training in Harmony. This podcast is about you making progress with your horse in a way that you both can love. It's about learning how to move and be in harmony. Because yes, you really can develop a horse to be both athletic and happy. When we show up as our best selves for our horses, our horses will show up for us. So let's get started. Hello, lovely podcast listeners. I'm back on my still uncomfortable podcasting chair. One day I'm going to get myself a new chair. Anyway, I am going to start with the announcement because I just can't stand it. I'm very excited. So the announcement is that after 16 years, we have updated the video classroom. We actually had to move it to a completely different platform because when we built it in 2010, there weren't any templates for building subscription sites. So we have cobbled it together and, you know, integrated things and made them talk to each other. And then over the years, you know how it goes with software. One piece of software stops talking to the other piece of software. And so we've been really holding it together with duct tape and chewing gum and paper clips. And now we have it on a new site. I'm really, really happy with it. It's going to feel like you're in Netflix watching it, and it's going to make it so much easier to find all the videos. I went through every single video myself, and I just was, you know, beaming with pride. We just finished it up, and it's now available. So the new video classroom is on a whole new site. You can go to dressagenaturally.net/classroom. And you can poke around in there. You can actually poke around all inside of it and see all the titles and the video thumbnails and before you even subscribe. So I hope you guys all go there and look around because I'm super, super excited and there's so much cool stuff in there. And we're going to be doing some live calls. I want it to become more of a hub for the community. And we're going to do some calls where I'll teach on something. And then we'll have opportunity at the end of the call where, like, you guys can talk to each other and we'll make, like, breakout groups, which we've done on other calls before in, you know, different courses. And it's always the highlight. So I really want this to be a more of a gathering place. Anyway, you'll hear more about this, but this is just fresh. It's really fresh at the time I'm recording this. And I have a little bit of, like... God, I ride horses all day. I do barn stuff and my body feels great. But like I stay on the computer and like my wrist hurts, my forearm hurts, my elbow's a little bit numb from like clicking things. But I'll be all right. It was a labor of love and I am happy to have done it. And I can't wait for you guys to go take a look. So please go take a look. dressagenaturally.net/classroom. Okay. All right, let's get to what I want to talk about. And I feel like I've brought this up before. It gets a little bit under my skin. So whenever I see this, I'm like, oh, I got to talk about this again. And it's when I'm scrolling through Facebook and I come across posts that are often long and they're either all about how positive reinforcement is not okay and doesn't work and creates all these horrible habits with your horse and why you shouldn't do it and why it doesn't work or it's bad. Or it's equally long or perhaps longer posts about why negative reinforcement, which is like pressure and release, why that is horrible and cruel and it doesn't work and your horse is going to be miserable. And so, I mean, I peruse and see if there's something I need to learn because, you know, I'm open to learning. But mostly I just want to pull my hair out and, you know, I can scroll on by. I'm comfortable learning and learning ways to do things even better than I do them. That's for sure. But when I read these kinds of posts, and you know the ones I'm talking about, they just don't feel helpful. And I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of an average student who's trying to learn how to be the best for their horse. And I'm just thinking, if I was at the beginning of my time with horses, and I scrolled through and found one of these posts, and then I scrolled a little bit and found the other side of that coin, equally as passionate, equally as technical and seemingly science-driven, making arguments that sound reasonable-ish, I would imagine my head would just feel like spinning. And I probably, well, I would do one of two things. I would just dive deeper into using a source that I trusted, or I would just stop listening and think these people are all crazy. Anyway, so I wanted to just spend a little time here on this podcast. It's not going to be like a PhD dissertation on the subject, but I want to just bring it up and help articulate, hopefully, the middle way, right? The truth is in the middle, and there's a way we can navigate this. Now, before I dive in, I just want to say, you know, I said this is not a PhD dissertation, but there is a PhD out there who has written a book and has a course. And if you react to this subject thinking, I just need to find a trusted source and go deeper so you really understand, I cannot recommend, you know, highly enough, Dr. Jennifer Zelligs, and her book is Animal Training 101. And she just describes it so beautifully, so in depth, but also from a very open-hearted spirit somehow, because it's pretty technical. But everything she does just comes through with so much heart. So that's the expert. If you wanted to learn from an expert and get the big picture umbrella view of all this kind of training, that's your source. So there you go. Dr. Jennifer Zelligs, Animal Training 101. Okay, so compared to how she could describe it, artfully and succinctly. I feel a little bit like a caveman when I breach this subject, but I'm going to do my best. I have to say I'm always a little bit nervous when I do this subject. And it's because I feel like if I start talking about it and I kind of use some of the terminology, there's going to be other people who are much smarter than me and have studied that in more depth, and I'm going to use some term not quite correctly, and someone's going to reach in my room and give me a smack. Like, you said that wrong. That's incorrect. And, you know, and that smack is more likely to be coming from someone in the positive reinforcement world, which I think is more than a little ironic. So in my little vision of someone reaching out and smacking me, it's usually someone from there. So I say that not as a generalization about anybody who uses positive reinforcement, because I use positive reinforcement. But I think we have to like say these things out loud. Anyway, so I use positive reinforcement. My horses do stuff, or my dog. And when they do, I tell them yes. And I give them something that they like. I just think that's being nice. That's like a nice way to move through the world. Yes, that was it. Here's something that you like, so you feel really glad you did it, and you know exactly the moment that you did the thing that I was thinking of. Yeah, I kind of come from an attitude that when we're interacting with our horses, I really do believe that they're looking at us, and they're thinking, what the heck are you trying to say? What do you want me to do? Like, I think they're trying to figure this stuff out. So positive reinforcement can be a really clear way of going, yes, and aren't you happy that you did it? Thank you so much. Here's a little payment. Here's a little scratch. Here's a little treat. That's all that is. I also use negative reinforcement, which that word, you know, I'll do a brief description of that, but basically it's using pressure. And then when they do the thing, you take the pressure off. That's what negative reinforcement is. I try to stay away from the punishment end of the spectrum. Positive punishment, meaning you add something. Negative punishment, you take something away. You know, like a kid, I'm going to take away your phone or whatever it is. But it's a description of an interaction. Something happens. You put something in the presence of the animal, a behavior happens, and then you do something afterwards. That's all. You're either reinforcing it or you're trying to get more of the behavior, or you're trying to get less of it. You're either reinforcing it or you're quote unquote punishing it. Okay. Most people, I think, especially listening here, are going to tend towards staying away from the punishment ends of things. It's not as effective. Right? So the reinforcing a behavior, you want more of a behavior. So instead of saying, just don't do that, don't do that, don't do that, it leaves the horse, sort of thinking, well, what do you want me to do? Oh, nice of you to ask. Okay, so positive, the reinforcement end tells the horse what you want them to do. Yes, more of that. Or there, let me guide you. And like, yes, now you're pointing in the right direction and I will take my hand off of you. Now there's people who will say that they never use punishment. But, I don't think it's possible to really go through life without being in more than one of these methods at the time. And there's, you could make a case for anyone who does positive reinforcement can easily slip over into the negative punishment, right? So you're giving, they do something, you give them a cookie. They do something, you give them a cookie. Now you want to progress it. So they do something, but you want them to do more. So you don't give them a cookie yet. And in that moment, if that stays there, it can get to a point where the horse is feeling like they're being punished. They're like, you're taking away my cookies. Like there was cookies coming every 3 seconds and now they're not coming. And so they can feel a little bit punished. And there's people who could argue that using pressure and release, it can easily slip over into a positive punishment moment, right? So you're gently waving the stick to direct the horse, in this direction, but they don't go. So you start to lightly touch the horse with the stick and they still don't go. And now you're touching a little harder. And then at some point, you're adding something that's not pleasant. And it starts to feel more like you're punishing them for not moving rather than directing them where to move, right? So I think we just have to own that. If we're using pressure and release, we have to be careful not to slip over into like a punishment sort of feeling situation. And if we're using positive reinforcement, we have to be careful we don't slip over into a negative punishment thing that we're withholding, and then our horses are getting frustrated, and then they're starting to get aggressive because they're frustrated because your timing was off. You didn't mean to be punishing them, but you are. All right, so nobody is immune from making mistakes and doing it wrong. So where do we live with horses? You can live wherever you want with your horses, with your animals. You can find, like I said in the last episode, you can find your way. And there's different circumstances where one of those techniques may be the most effective technique for that particular situation. So the truth is in the middle, and I think that there's a way to use each of those appropriately and with the most artful technique and coming from a very heartfelt intention. I feel like there is a way to use all of those, and there's ways to mess it up pretty well too. So let's just try not to mess it up, okay? All right, so let's dig in a little bit. So again, negative reinforcement, you could also say pressure release, but it's usually defined as, quote, having an aversive added. You have to add something aversive first, and then when the desired behavior happens, you remove the aversive, right? So that's why it's called negative. You're taking away the aversive. Now, here's the thing. I mean, aversives don't sound nice. Negative doesn't sound nice. Aversive doesn't sound nice. But here's where sometimes a conversation just takes a big leap, that there's in some people's conversations, aversive equals painful, harsh, cruel. And it doesn't. An aversive doesn't require that it's something painful or harsh. It just requires the removal of something that that particular animal or person or whoever you're teaching is motivated to avoid. Right? So the key word in the definition is aversive, and that simply means something that the person or animal is motivated to move away from. And that threshold is different for each individual and is contextual. So I always think about, when I think about my life with horses and especially doing dressage, but really for riding at all, but also playing at Liberty, this applies, or online. But I think about doing the waltz. And when I was taking dance lessons, you know, my partner touched me. I mean, we, you know, there's a frame. And when I was learning, he was guiding me. And there were times he was like, you know, grabbing me and like putting my center of gravity in such a way that my feet would land where they needed to land. And that was part of my learning process. He would move me. And I, you know, when I felt pressure, I moved with it. My feet landed in the right place. And over time, I learned it. And then the dancing was like, you know, connected, but the feather light, just like with riding. So the leader, the leader's guiding hand pressure stayed within a range that was mild enough to be comfortable in isolation. So the amount of pressure that he put on me, even when I needed to kind of be practically shoved around, like if he put his hand on me standing still with that amount of pressure, it was fine. You know, I mean, it would have been weird if someone just came up and like put their arm around my waist and like squeezed that hard. But like the sensation itself was fine, far away from painful or cruel or hurtful or, you know, something that could injure me. So, you know, that the pressure from the leader in the waltz, you know, mild enough to be comfortable in isolation, and yet still something that I naturally tended to respond to. That when he put more pressure on the left side of my, you know, body, I moved to the right. I had a natural inclination to resolve the pressure. Like, I didn't push into it. That just naturally not what happened. Now, I have to say, when I danced with my partner who was also learning at the same time, sometimes when he did that, I did push into the pressure. But that's because we were off balance, right? So when he pushed, he felt like he was pushing me over, And then I push back to try to not fall over. So there's an art. There's an art to it. And balance is the key. And this is why I highlight so much self-carriage and natural balance. We need to be balanced with our horses. Otherwise, you know, we're going to lean into each other and cause the other one to lean back to us so that they don't fall over. Anyway, but the functional definition of what an aversive stimulus is in the context of a pressure and release kind of dynamic is it just needs to be mild enough to be comfortable in isolation and still something that naturally will tend to create movement or behavior in the direction that you want. And it needs to be released the exact moment that the movement is made. And therefore, there's like a payout. Ooh, I moved over there. Now I feel the lightness again. I'm going to do that again. I learned something. And the next time, as my feet naturally start to go where they need to go, the leader is not going to shove me over there. If he kept shoving me over there, no matter what I did, that would get weird and uncomfortable, and I might not like it. But that's not a problem of the fact that he's using pressure. It's a problem that he's not doing it well. All right, so this kind of, you know, that example of learning to dance the waltz is pressure and release in one of its most elegant forms, right? So the pressure used doesn't need to be unpleasant in any kind of emotional sense. It just needs to be something that the learner would naturally want to resolve. And again, that's going to be different from individual to individual. So you got to look at your horse. One horse, you pick your hand up and they're freaking out. They are afraid. So you can't judge that the technique in general by that. You just go, ooh, that horse, that's too much. Another horse, meh, maybe they're duller or desensitized or something. Like you've got to figure it out. A desensitized horse, the pressure, you're going to have to get too big and it's not going to work because it's like, that's too much. That's outside my realm of something that would be comfortable in isolation. But if you think about it, like a light touch on the shoulder, you know, think of you're walking with a friend and you're busy, you know, looking in their eyes and having a conversation and they're looking at the ground and they see a pothole in front of you. And they give you a light touch on the shoulder and redirect you to avoid the pothole. That's, you know, pressure release. So a light touch on the shoulder, an aid put on when riding, or a guiding hand, like they all can operate on that principle. And so what I hear when I hear an ethical, you know, critique of negative reinforcement or using pressure and release, it usually is targeting the intensity and the source of the aversive, right? So using fear, using pain, using escalation that goes to, you know, significant discomfort. But then that's fair enough, right? That's the ethical critique, that it was too much pressure. It was pressure that was causing fear. It was pressure that was causing pain. It was pressure that escalates to discomfort, so it becomes a threat. It's too intense. It's too sharp. Those are all really fair ethical critiques of the use of negative reinforcement in a situation, but that critique doesn't apply absolutely to the mechanism itself. The idea of pressure and release, that mechanism is neutral, right? So it's just, you put this and then that happens and you take it off. So what matters the most morally, ethically, is the individual horse's experience of what's happening. That we need to look at. And there's no rule of thumb because every horse is different. And that's where the art comes in. And I think it's really, really important, independent of a particular horse, that we as practitioners, knowing that we're going to use this technique, that we have guardrails. We have a limit to how much pressure and what kind of pressure we use. There's some pressures that I will never use. I will never use a double twisted wire snaffle. I will never use spurs that are pointy, or these days, spurs at all. You know, so there, but I will carry a stick. How hard am I going to touch the horse with a stick? I have a limit. I have limits, and I have types of sticks that I use. Ones that make a little more noise, but not so stingy. You know, that we can have our limits to how much pressure we could possibly want to use ever. We can have pressure. We can have limits as to if it's not working, then what do we do? Like, that's a really, like, ooh, that, you know, do we just naturally, well, if we're using pressure release, it means we have to escalate. No, it doesn't. If we're using pressure and release, it means we're okay with causing our horses great amounts of pain and fear. No, it doesn't. We can have limits and we can observe our horse. All right, so I have a little rule of life, which is don't judge a method or technique by how someone does it poorly. And I think this is what's happening a lot. And this is why these posts that I'm, you know, that initiated my desire to do this episode, they come from a great place, because what I'm imagining, if I give them the most generous interpretation, is probably these people are seeing methods done really poorly. Someone is seeing someone trying to learn how to clicker train, and they've just created a horse that's biting people and it's dangerous. That can happen if you don't do it well. Or someone's seeing people using pressure and release, and they're seeing horses that are pressured way too much. There's never release and it always escalates. And they're seeing horses shut down or get anxious or get hurt. And then they feel passionate enough that they want to go write about it, which is absolutely fine as long as they're not throwing out the baby with the bathwater and confusing well-minded people who just want to be able to use all the tools. And I think it's a much more interesting and helpful conversation to discuss how we can do these well, rather than just saying, don't do them at all. I've got some big news for you, and this is brand new news. The Dressage Naturally video classroom has officially moved to an entirely new platform, and honestly, it is so much better. After 16 years, all the behind-the-scenes tech integrations holding the old site together finally decided to stop cooperating. So instead of patching it again, we rebuilt the whole experience. And now it actually feels more like Netflix than old school membership sites. It's dramatically easier to find exactly what you need. You can browse by common things people are working on, like low energy horses or tension or crookedness, engagement, lateral work, partnership, and so much more. And now this is something I'm really excited about. I'm adding live community calls where I'll do some teaching and then give you a chance to connect and interact with other riders in breakout discussions. And somehow it's going to be all the same price, just $29 a month. Go to dressagenaturally.net/classroom. And because you're a podcast listener, I want to do something really special. If you start your membership before June 20th, You can attend the very first live call, and you can lock in a special celebration discounted rate of just $20 a month for as long as you stay subscribed. Now that's actually the same price that the original classroom was back when we opened it in 2010. Head over to dressagenaturally.net/classroom and use this code 20monthly. That's 20monthly. And that locks in your membership for just $20 a month. Now, if you're already a member on the current original classroom platform, your subscription will automatically end. And in order to keep access to the videos, you're going to have to set up a new subscription on the new website. Now, check your inbox for emails that'll explain more of that, or just email us with any questions. But remember to use the code 20monthly to get your subscription at the lowest possible price. I can't wait to see everybody in the classroom and welcome you all on the live call. Okay, back to the pod. Here's another thing to think about when you think about what kind of techniques you're going to use. And again, the camp of the positive reinforcement is more likely to have people in it that say to only use positive reinforcement. I think there's a lot of people who use the pressure and release who are a little more open to also then at the end giving a little cookie, you know, and to adding in some positive reinforcement. So I think, and this is what I do, I use both, and sometimes some methods for one reason and one horse and a different method in different circumstances. And it's not about the horse doing the technique. It's about trying to explain something to your horse and then use whatever means possible within the range of kind and not injurious. I'm trying to explain something to my horse, and I'm going to say, how can I explain this? That's what I'm thinking. Then I have, okay, here's a tool to do this. Here's a tool to that. I can switch from one to the other. I can be using one and then, oh, that was really good. Boom, jackpot. You're going to get a bunch of cookies right now. So I'm not invested in which technique. I am invested in how do I explain this to my horse? And when I think about being invested in how am I going to explain this to my horse, it reminds me of, well, to know what it is I'm trying to explain. And it opens up all possibilities. Instead of just thinking I have to become perfect at this one technique, I was like, I have to be perfect at having the vision of what I want and looking at my body language and my mind and my subconscious and my, you know, timing and how I set things up and is it the right day to do this and what's my horse like. I'm looking at everything. I'm not just going and now I shall go out and perform negative reinforcement techniques. No, negative, the positive, negative, all that stuff has to work for me. I'm not working for it. So again, I see people becoming identified. I'm a positive reinforcement trainer. Okay, that's nice. What are you trying to explain to your horse? And the thing to remember about positive reinforcement is it doesn't actually elicit behavior, right? So pressure and release can elicit a behavior. I'm going to touch you here, and that's going to cause you, hopefully, to do something to move away from it. Now, positive reinforcement is actually something that you do after they do the behavior. So a lot of times I hear people talking about positive reinforcement as a training, how they train. And I'm thinking, how are you getting the behavior to happen? And there's different ways to do that. There's targeting, there's luring, there's mimicry. There's like, you have to either just wait, which is scan and capture. You just kind of wait. And if it happens, boom, you're right there. to reinforce it. But sometimes you're going to have to wait a long time. Now, you can be clever, right? So I think in general, if you're doing just scan and capture, then one of the things you have to really think about is how are you going to arrange the circumstances and put the horse in a situation where he's that's most likely to cause the behavior to happen with a very minimal aid. I mean, that's always a great thing to think about, right? So when I teach the horses that lay down on a cue, I got that through scan and capture. And I set it up. I'm so clever. I'd give them a bath, hose them off, and then I'd walk them over to the sand. Chances are they are going to lay down. And when they do, click and treat. And pretty soon, you know, and as they do it, I do a particular little, I kind of paw the ground with my own foot. I mirror them a little bit. And pretty soon me pawing the ground with my foot becomes the cue. So that's scan and capture. So it's successful when you're clever and you set it up. Now that can happen, you know, with dressage, you know, and other training problems too. You know, if I'm going to say, all right, I'm going to teach my horses flying changes today, I'm going to be taking a moment to think about how can I arrange the circumstances that will be most likely to cause that flying change to happen today. Right. That's, you know, the circumstances could involve, you know, am I in an arena or out in a field? Is there a fence or not a fence? When do I do it? Do I do it from counter canter? You're arranging the things that come before the behavior to try to set that up. And if you're only doing scan and capture, you have to be really clever because I guess you're not touching the horse or doing anything. But unless you're really willing to just sit there and wait and not give the horse a clue, you know, I think the reality is we're going, you know, a guiding touch can be really helpful. I like to give horses a chance to figure it out, but I'll help them be successful a little quicker. And we can debate, when do you sit and wait for them and wait for it just to come naturally? And when do you give it a little help? Right. So I think this is where, well, again, if you're doing positive reinforcement, you're probably creating some sort of problem for the horse to solve. And you can do positive reinforcement even if you elicit the behavior through pressure and release. So I have a video in the classroom called Pressure, Release, Reward, where I show that. And so you can do both. You can do things to cause the behavior that then after the fact you can positively reinforce. But for me, and probably because I'm riding, which is naturally something that where you're in contact with the horse, right? They are feeling you. And gentle touches, guiding, it essentially narrows the sort of search space for the animal, right? So if I'm just like looking and turning my shoulder and I'd like the horse to move their forehand over and they don't, I can help. And I can like wave my stick a little bit and move the air just enough. The horse is like, it's not hurting them, but they're like, huh, I think I might move away from that. And then it releases and they go, oh, I figured it out. So I didn't have to stand there staring at them, hoping that they do the thing, right? So I'm kind of giving a clue. I'm saying it's somewhere over there. May I suggest you go over there or do this or move or something. And I found that in many, many cases, that is both kinder and more efficient. So again, the more precise ethical question isn't, is negative reinforcement used? And if it's used, that means it's not ethical. But the question to be asking is, how aversive is the aversive? And does the horse have the ability to resolve it? And so if you're answering that, how aversive is it? And the answer is like, mildly aversive. And if you answer the question, is there a way for the horse to resolve this puzzle and move away from it? And you answer yes, easily. Then that's where pressure and release, negative reinforcement, can be gentle. And it can be this, it even feels collaborative. You know, talk about partnership. I feel like it can be done in partnership. You're creating, you know, a maze has some walls. It says, don't go this way, go that way. Here's your choices, this way or that way. And then you can figure it out. Okay, and this brings me to another really, really, really important part of using pressure and release that is talked about. I mean, this is taught in horsemanship, but it's not often talked about when discussions about positive and negative reinforcement come up. And that's, I think it's called prompt fading. and it's really just, you know, what we're talking in horsemanship. It's like you, like in Pirelli land, it was like you go up your phases, but then you always come back and start with the lightest again, and you're not done until you don't need the high phase. So you start with some sort of level of, and I'll put in quotes, like assistance. So you start with a level of assistance that's going to guarantee that the horse gets what you're trying to do. All right, so, and then, so you have, you know, step one, you point over there, the horse is like, what? And then you like point, and then you kind of wave the stick over here, and the horse is like, ah, there's a stick waving. And then you kind of stick with it, and then maybe you have to like gently touch the horse on the shoulder, and then he takes a step, and you're like, yay! And you release. Great, you're not done. You're not done yet. Thank you for that. And then we try it again. I point and turn my shoulder. The horse is like, what? I pick up the stick and I move it around. The horse is like, eh, that's annoying. And then I go to lightly touch the horse and he's like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to move over there. And he takes a step. Yay. Great. We're not done. We do it again. I have the intention. I point over there, turn my shoulder. The horse is like, what are you doing? I start to lift the stick and he goes, oh yeah, I move over there. It happened again. Yes, you're getting it. Thank you so much. We're not done. Take a breath. Ready, horse? Point over there. Move my shoulder. He moves. Done. That's when I would go jackpot and you get some cookies on top of it. And hopefully the next time, I just point and bring my shoulder, and he's like, got it, forehand yield. So that to me is a really nice way to teach a forehand yield pretty efficiently, or whatever it is that you're asking the horse to do. Now imagine if I was only using scan and capture, and my horse is staring at me, I point and move my shoulder back, and he just stares at me. And I wait, and he stares at me, and I wait. And he stares at me, and I wait. I don't see the problem in going, let me show you what that meant. Now I know you could wait until your horse happened to move in that way, and then you can click and treat it, and then you do that a bunch of times, and then he starts moving his shoulder that way all the time, and then you put a cue, and then he's like, oh, that cue means that. You can get there. So you can get there either way, and I think that's fair. You can try getting there either way. Nothing wrong with it. And that's the point. There's nothing wrong with either way if it's done well. And so this is really different than what's often seen with pressure and release and just horse training gone wrong, is that the horse ends up and the horse and the human end up dependent on the strong aversive pressure. Keep your leg on. Don't let them slow down. Keep your leg on. Or, you know, the horses that have the strong bit and the draw reins and the martingale and the, you know, and the legs and the spurs and not one but two sticks. And, you know, that's pressure and release where it was not ever released or diminish. The horse didn't learn anything. You're just going on controlling aids. And often controlling aids over time need to constantly be increased. So that's pressure release gone wrong. It's just pressure. It's just controlling. You're just moving the body around. And the learning isn't happening. That's just submission or giving up. So, you know, don't do that. I heard this described as like the negative reinforcement and the pressure and release becomes like a scaffolding rather than a mechanism of control or force. And I love that idea of a scaffolding while you're trying to build the behavior. And then when you've built the behavior, you take the scaffolding down. So that in my mind, you know, just sort of, again, it narrows the choices. Like, let me show you. It's something over here. And then once you've learned it, then we can refine it further. And I find, you know, when I think about the foundational work and then the dressage, I feel like riding, refined riding, it just sort of fits in this different category because at a certain place, it doesn't feel as much like pressure and release as it does just moving centers of gravities together. So I find a lot of times in my foundational work, I might use pressure and release, like, hey, when this comes on, you need to go forward. When this is over here, that's my leg, move sideways away from it. You know, I'm teaching them using negative reinforcement, probably backed up with a little bit of positive reinforcement. So they go, oh, when I feel this go here, when I feel this go there. And the goal is to find this harmonious balance. Well, to find balance. Balance means you can be in harmony. It's hard to be in harmony if you aren't balanced. And once you achieve that balance, then it's a game of moving centers of gravity and practicing those coordinations and being able to stay in balance as you move those center of gravity. So doing more refined riding and dressage doesn't feel as much like negative reinforcement. So it can enter this other realm, but only if the balance is achieved and only if they understand what those aids mean when they're on. So I think much more about pressure and release around foundational stuff. And then, of course, it's coming into play with refined riding, for sure. But again, it doesn't, it's not it's a different kind of learning. It's a muscle memory coordination kind of moving. And this is where, like, I don't have sophisticated language around this a way some people who are trained in such things would, but that's what it just feels like to me as a little cavewoman dressage rider. Anyway, so I think it's really important to know that this is the goal. Like, the goal is to flow your center of gravities together. And I think this happens even at Liberty or online with a horse. You know, you have the horse moving. They understand some basic aids of, like, when this goes up, you move away there. When this turns back, you move here. When I'm coming towards you like this, you go faster. Like, those are things that are built. Those are things that are taught through positive and negative, or however you want to teach them, so that you get to a place where then there's some flow. The horse can move around at liberty and you can move around and it becomes a dance, the same way as doing dressage and refined riding is. So again, the goal is not to do positive reinforcement. The goal is not to do negative reinforcement. The goal is to train and educate and help answer the question when your horse looks at you and goes, what do you want me to do? Then we can answer that question. That's the goal. So for people who are concerned about the inherent dangers of negative reinforcement or pressure release, I really respect where that comes from. I mean, a lot of harmful training has come from permission to use pressure. And the instinct to protect animals from that is a really good one. But I'll always gently push back on the inherently part, right? So negative reinforcement isn't inherently cruel. It just means removing something to increase a behavior. And that something doesn't have to be painful or frightening. The critical question is what that something is. Applying pain and applying a feather-like guiding touch are both technically negative reinforcement, but they are worlds apart ethically. And what can make gentle negative reinforcement kind is that it can direct the horse where to find the answer. And whatever the aversive applied is, it should be the minimum needed and should naturally diminish with learning. If the pressure never fades, if it escalates to pain or fear or injury, that's a red flag. If it fades towards invisible, that's skillful teaching. I love positive reinforcement. I think it's wonderful. I love doing it with my horses, and I really think it should be used more in the horse world, for sure. But, you know, used skillfully with the lightest possible pressure and immediate release, negative reinforcement can be a gentle scaffold, not a punishment. And the ethics of this are really in how aversive the aversive is and whether, you know, the horse has easy agency to resolve it. And a lot of times in the horse world, that is not given. You know, the aversive is very aversive and it's more controlling. The horse is trapped and there's too much of like the icky kind of submission in play, for sure. But again, don't judge the technique based on how it's done poorly. You know, pure positive reinforcement is, that's a cool goal. But in practice, I think even the most positive trainers use some form of pressure and release. And like I said earlier, a little bit of punishment can sneak in there. You know, a body block, a turn of the shoulder, a gentle touch, you know, that's pressure. So ruling out the entire idea of pressure and release means ruling out some of the kindest and most naturalistic ways to communicate that we have with animals. So again, I think it's better to define what makes the quote-unquote aversive acceptable, and especially when talking about very specific circumstances with very specific horses, because you can always say something and then find a scenario where that would not be good for a different type of horse, where it's perfect for another type of horse. So this is where I think we need to get specific and not go on rants of why one is always used the best and the other is always used to the worst. So better define it, you know, in those specifics than to avoid the conversation entirely and say, I'm not even going to think about that. It gets interesting in the specific examples. And then again, where we're presented with a horse and a behavior and a challenge, and we can get together and go, huh, I wonder what the best way to explain this to this horse would be. And remember, you know, those prompts, those directives that we use in negative reinforcement should be faded out. And they can be faded out till they can leave practically no trace. And then the actual finished product, you see a cue and the behavior happens, it can look identical to one that was scanned and captured, right? So my horse is laying down. You don't know if I ever put a rope on their legs or not. I didn't. I just scan and capture it. But I've seen horses lay down that looks beautiful, and then you find out later they did it, you know, with ropes and stuff. So you can get there. The goal is to get there in a way that the horse understands, doesn't get frustrated, and feels pretty happy that he did it. So I think that suggests that, you know, the real skill in training isn't picking one pure methodology and saying that's the only one. You can choose to explore only one. Go for it. You do what you do you. But I think it's not so much about saying one is right and one is wrong, but knowing when to cue, how to help the horse, when to wait, when to know when something isn't working, even if it seemed like a great idea, and when to find a better way, and then how to improve the quality of the technique. Maybe you have a great idea, but it's the way you're doing it. How do we do what we're doing even better? Right? And so if we're using positive reinforcement and it's not working, then we have to figure out how to set the circumstance up a little bit better to elicit the behavior that we want. Because maybe in some circumstances, if you just wait, you're going to create a lot of frustration in you and your horse. And if you're using negative reinforcement and it's not working, we have to have other ways than just more pressure. We have to have limits and we have to be able to step back and go, huh, how could I set the circumstance up better? How could I explain it better? How can I make my horse even happier that he did the little step that he did? Anyway, in the end, we want to set up the pieces that we have. And we want to end up having it feel like a dance. And it's not easy. And as soon as you figure out how to do it, chances are a horse will come along that shows you everything you don't yet know. But you know what? If that didn't happen, we wouldn't be here. We didn't pick bicycles. So enjoy the process. If this episode resonates with you, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Training horses is a long game. The more you listen, the more pieces of the puzzle you'll have. To see all your learning resources, visit dressagenaturally.net. That's where you'll find free videos, online courses, my book. You can sign up for my Wednesday Wisdom email or even book a private consult. Most of all, remember, you got this. Never underestimate the possibility for things to improve in ways you cannot yet imagine. Till next time, love your horse, move in harmony, and enjoy the process.